Hi, Eve.
Hey, Joel. What's up?
Oh, you know, getting by. So I saw one of your recent conference presentations, and it was at React Rally in 2018. And it was actually amazing. I really enjoyed it and was thoroughly entertained. And frankly, it kind of blew my mind because I've given my presentations are boring, but yours was amazing and not boring.
I'm sure that's not true about yours, but thank you. I had a lot of fun doing that. Yeah, I think when I first put together that talk, I was like, I'd never really went to conferences before last year, but when I did, I was watching the Fluent keynotes and I was thinking like, oh, this is a show. I kind of understand what this is. So I have a background in theater and sketch comedy and improv and stuff. And I was like, I've done all these shows. I've been to a million shows. I've been in a ton of bad shows. I've been in a ton of good ones. And I just kind of approached it from that angle, like theater techniques. And like, I want people to learn something. I want them to have fun, but I also want them to remember it. So that's why I was crashing scooters and doing that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, like, one, your live coding was amazing. Like, you're typing and live coding on stage, which, like, by itself is, you know, like a no small feat. But then you start audience participation and you actually have people come on stage with you, which, you know, at that point, I'm just like, like the mind blown, you know, meme going in my head. Cause not only was it informative, right? Like, we're learning about GraphQL and we're seeing, you know, how it works in like an amazing way on stage, you know, with presence. And like, I'm thinking like the whole time I'm watching this, I'm like, what's the process? Like, how do you even like start to come up with a presentation like that? We'll get into more technical stuff, but I really want to chat with you about the, you know, like your conference talks and how you approach that sort of thing, you know, like given your background in theater and improv and that sort of thing. But what kind of, you know, what can we do if we don't have that background? Like, what are some, you know, approaches that you think people might take to, you know, give a presentation that engages the audience at that level?
Yeah, totally. So I would say I had help. Alex, my husband and coworker, and I kind of plotted out what we wanted to cover. So I knew we had 30 minutes. I wanted to just kind of have my main goals were having people learn something. So making something approachable. And then we tried to figure out what to do for the live demo. And I thought if we could use this idea of collaboration, and it's sort of something we have tried to do in our classes, is like, how do we get people in this classroom environment, which is sometimes a little awkward, to start interacting with other people? How do we get them to engage? So that's where the idea of the demo came from. And then we just kind of heightened that to the extreme of trying to host it over a free Heroku dyno and have all this stuff that could potentially go wrong. But it was a lot of work behind the scenes for that to work out. And then I just practiced it a lot. So I kind of hesitated from doing that at the beginning, but 2 weeks out, I was just running through that thing over and over again. And it was horrible many of the times. And I like was stressed out every day. And so it just came from a lot of preparation, boiling everything down to what I wanted to cover, and then just making sure that I was down to like having the perfect notes about what I was supposed to cover in each minute. So it was, it was a lot.
Yeah. I mean, you can tell I'm like, well, one, when I'm watching it, right, you make it look easy on stage, and the practice and preparation and that sort of thing is that has a lot to do with that, I would assume.
Yeah, totally. It does. And I definitely had run through the live coding bit of it quite a bit. I think with live coding, there can be a tendency to kind of overcomplicate things and to have hundreds of lines of code on the screen. And you'll notice in that I never had more than like 20 in every file. So having less to look at made it such that there was a lot less room for error. If I had added on any complexity or had anything there that could have gotten in my way, then I would have started making mistakes. So keeping those files super small was like critical to not crashing and burning up there.
Kind of reminds me of like our videos on AKID, right? Like the idea is to keep it short and we want people to see the code. But, you know, once you have 200 lines of code, it's really, you can't parse that visually, watch and understand what's going on, especially if it's like a new concept that you're literally trying to learn on the spot.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I was just scrolling up and down, then people would feel like it's hard and they can't go do it. And I thought, if I do this and I have a simple example, then maybe some people pay attention in the audience, first of all, look up from Slack, and then they'll think, hey, maybe this weird person can do it. So maybe I'll go work with Apollo Server on Monday. So that was the goal.
Yeah, I liked how you had, because it was obvious that there was also like some pre-built stuff, right? Like you had under the hood, like some components and styles and all that kind of stuff set up, which aren't like, they're not germane to the topic at hand of like demonstrating GraphQL and how that works. But, you know, like we jumped from kind of nothing into, you know, a full demo of how it works. It was really good though, Eve. I really, really enjoyed it a lot. So it was about GraphQL. That's what this talk was about. And you've just released a book with O'Reilly titled, what's the...
Learning GraphQL. Yeah.
Learning GraphQL. So it's a very, very specific and on point title. And GraphQL just lately has kind of blown up. Like it's been around for several years, but in the last even year, it just really seems like it's picking up traction. Why is everybody talking about GraphQL now?
A couple reasons. I think people are finding that they have a lot of clients that they have to load with data, and we need to make sure that our requests for this information are as simple as possible and are as small as possible. So with GraphQL, we're just getting one response with all the data that we need versus all these extra fields and making things slower on our phones. We also see that the tooling has come a long way in the last couple years. So GraphQL was only open sourced in 2015. So all these tools are starting to emerge, but we're still at the really early stages of this. So I feel like there's so much potential for GraphQL, but I feel like any situation where you're trying to get some data to a client quickly, GraphQL just has, it's just better. It's just going to do things more quickly for you.
Yeah. And when you say better, I assume we're talking about better than our traditional kind of RESTful, REST-y, REST APIs that we might all be used to using.
Yeah, exactly. So ultimately, we're talking about the same thing. We're talking about with REST and GraphQL, an HTTP request and a response. But we're going to get a lot of efficiency if we work with GraphQL, because another nice thing is we can put a lot of the sorting, the filtering, the connecting of data. You can move a lot of that work to your GraphQL server. And it's just something that you can't do with REST.
So both of these things, we have REST on one side and GraphQL on the other. They're both specifications versus like, and, you know, people will think, oh, GraphQL, we're talking about Apollo or some specific client relay or whatever. But really, we're discussing like a specification. And I know, like to me, in my observation, like REST has a specification that was very academic, and the specification itself has been debated endlessly on the internet, causing intense and never-ending confusion, right? Like people are just like, what's this? How do we do it? Hypermedia, you know, RPC, what are we doing with REST? What's real REST? What's RESTful? What's REST-like? And I don't see that same debate going on with GraphQL. And is that something you've observed as well?
Yeah, I think so. The GraphQL spec is pretty pretty clear about what it defines. It defines how you should write a schema. It defines how you should write a query. It gives kind of an overview of what a GraphQL server should look like, and then it sort of leaves it at that. But the ideas in there are fairly simple. You can look at the spec, and I encourage you to do so because it's pretty cool. But yeah, the spec is fairly minimal, and then Apollo and Prisma and Relay and other folks who are creating tools around that, they kind of agree on that. So I don't know if that's just because the spec is good, which it is, but it could be something that maybe people start fighting about that down the road. But for now, people seem pretty aligned on it.
I noticed that it's cool with the different clients that exist. They all seem and feel similar, but have, you know, just kind of opinionated approaches or different, slightly different API surfaces for you to work with. But there's like a continuity that flows through them. That's interesting to me.
Yeah, exactly. I think, again, the ideas in the spec are pretty good, and people seem to follow that pretty closely when they're designing their own solutions around it.
So I should be ripping our REST API out and switching to GraphQL. Is that the short story?
Yeah, I would do it today for sure. No, I would say, yeah, you're going to get a lot of great benefits from it. You can also stand up, and this is how a lot of people move to GraphQL, is they stand up kind of a GraphQL gateway in between all of their REST APIs and the clients. So you can use GraphQL to fetch from REST endpoints, and that's a great way to get started because that can use all of the setup that you already have, but then you can get some organization from the gateway.
Yeah, I was kidding. We already started doing that. And like for us, it's been really great. It's just like you say, like we set up some, we have Rails, and there's a really nice GraphQL Pro plugin for Rails that we purchased that like you start setting it up. And now not only can we use existing endpoints, but we can also like start adding different data sources and just kind of like this amalgamation of data in the background. And it's been like, we're augmenting right now. We didn't have to go like full bore into GraphQL and like ditch REST altogether. Cause frankly, I still like REST for some things, but GraphQL is amazing for other things. And I can see a world where like we're all on GraphQL, but like right now we're able to use it and leverage this power, but we aren't, you know, like having to go full on and into, you know, it's not like one or the other black and white situation.
Totally. And I like to make jokes about burning it all down, but there are a lot of great things with maybe somebody has a great REST API set up for authentication and they don't want to rebuild it. And you can use that in conjunction with a GraphQL service as well. So you can get a lot of benefits without having to burn it all down.
Have you used Gatsby much at all?
I've played around with it a little bit, and I'm excited to learn more about it. But I know that people are really loving that, and the GraphQL angle makes it even better. Yeah.
So Gatsby's like a platform for building static websites, and in my view, like it has this potential to really eat into WordPress, which I'm like honestly stoked about. But like the cool thing to me is that the whole thing is it's really like GraphQL forward, right? Like they've embraced it fully and they've built this platform and this tool that we can use. It's open source and free to use. But you can actually take it and then, you know, build a new blog, a static blog, but then also use your existing WordPress as an API and bring that in through GraphQL and grab from like all the different data sources to build your static website up, which I think is pretty fascinating.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I think there's going to be tons of new tools like that, that if they put GraphQL first, will be particularly interesting because we have Apollo, we have Prisma, we have Gatsby, but there's a lot of room for others to kind of start doing things in a GraphQL way as well. So it'll be fun to see where it goes.
Yeah, I see that a lot. And it's across different platforms too. So we're mostly, I think, in our conversation talking about Node and, you know, kind of that related ecosystem. But, you know, like people embracing the spec across, you know, different languages and different backends and that sort of thing, which is, I'm really pumped on the future of GraphQL and the whole ecosystem. I think it's going to be something that we're going to see a lot more of. And now's a good time to start learning GraphQL.
Absolutely.
So to kind of talk about learning a little bit, so we're talking about this new thing, right? Like we have this hot new thing on the internet. We have GraphQL. Behind that, we have React, which, you know, everybody's excited about. It continues to be like a phenomenon, an egghead. And to mention, you also have a book, Learning React. Is that the title?
That's right. Yep. Yeah. Learning React, learning GraphQL. Very creative.
No, I mean, they're great, right? Like one, if I want to learn those things, it's going to come up well on Google, which is good. And then it also suggests that this is like a thing that's more focused on somebody that's just starting. And it's kind of a pattern like with both of your books, right? Like you're focused on entry level or beginners or somebody that's new to these concepts. Learning, is that an intentional approach that you've used?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you have the fundamentals right, you should be able to do everything else. So a lot of folks want to dive into the most advanced thing first, and then they get overwhelmed and then they kind of bail out on the whole thing. So GraphQL in particular is so new that if I can teach the fundamentals well, then people are going to have what they need to go build the next great GraphQL tool or build their own projects using GraphQL. So it's a little too early to say that like this is the right way, but we're focused a lot on the spec and on the current tooling, and just getting people in the door should make them like they'll be more able to survive in the sea as it gets more crowded with options. So that's kind of what we go for. I think fundamentals are kind of the way to get advanced. So if you see code that's written really well, that's really simple, that's kind of like a dream. The person who wrote it probably knew the fundamentals pretty well. So
when you're approaching something as like a newcomer, right? Like, it feels like you approach a lot of different technologies and you're kind of a lifelong learner and somebody that likes to learn things and figure them out. What's your own process when you're approaching something complex that you want to learn more about and perhaps eventually teach or use professionally?
Yeah. So I like to follow the video tutorials a lot, and then I try to read the source material. So when I was learning GraphQL, I looked at the spec, and the React docs is where I started with that stuff too. And then from there, I'll try to just build something. So I think when I started in my career in web development, I would take a tutorial and I'd build the activity that was part of the tutorial, but I wouldn't really take it beyond that. And now I feel like until I can really build something with it, I probably can't answer the questions that our students will ask. So that's what I try to do. And because we're teaching so much, we can build all sorts of app ideas, and just we can continue to practice things out and figure out what are really the things that developers need to be able to do with this thing. And hopefully I can save people time when I go teach them in person or in a book.
Yeah. One of the like struggles for me when I was especially when I was a newcomer, and even now, right? Like, it's the idea of, well, what should I build? I don't have anything interesting to build. And I wondered, like, do you have any approaches to fighting that? Or do you just, are good ideas raining constantly down in your living room when you and Alex are ideating?
Yeah, just a constant storm of ideas. Not really, but we do have little ideas, like just things that would make our lives a little bit easier. So the thing we built for a React class was, sounds very stupid, but a ski day counter. So Alex and I are obsessed with skiing, and we just wanted an app to track our ski days so that we could brag about them over the summer and stuff. So we put that together, and just small ideas that we can use to kind of test out what we've learned and figure out where the gaps are.
Yeah, I think people, a lot of times when they're starting, they want, like, the ideas are too big. Like, instead, if we can narrow that down into something that's, just useful, or like even goofy and silly.
Yeah.
Or, mildly entertaining, I think is another way to look at stuff.
Yeah. I always go for mild entertainment. Totally.
Well, I see that, like, my kids want to, they want to make a game, and like their idea is basically a AAA rated, like, mega game versus, hey, let's focus on a single mechanic.
Yeah.
This one little nugget of something that's cool, like at the end of the day, like a lot of the examples end up being to-do lists, which I actually think is about the perfect example because it covers a lot of ground, but people get bored. So it's not fun and entertaining.
Yeah, totally. Well, yeah, a ski day counter is basically a to-do app. So it's super simple, but yeah, still manageable enough to put together that you feel like you did something, but not something that you have to quit your job to do.
Right. Honestly, to me, professional web development is mostly like lists and forms.
It is.
I mean, there's a lot of other stuff that goes on too, but like at the end of the day, like, it's okay, you're going to make lists, you're going to make forms, you're going to update those lists with these forms, and then check things off when they're done.
Yeah, totally. That's so funny.
Modern internet and all these frameworks are built to create fancy to-do applications.
There's a lot of to-dos. And then the one over sockets is chat. So it's all to-do lists and applications.
Yeah, that's right. Address books, those are another good ones. Yeah, for sure. So what are you learning? Like, what's next? Like, you have React and GraphQL, and I'm sure those are going to continue for years. I'm personally confident of that, and probably going to be great in terms of business. But like, what else is on the horizon, and what have you been looking at lately that's interesting?
Yeah, just staying on top of all those GraphQL and React things. And then we've been getting into a lot of serverless stuff lately, which kind of came about because we're working on this volunteer project for a nonprofit organization. It's called the High Fives Foundation, which supports people who are injured in Tahoe doing extreme sports. So they have this website that isn't very accessible, and they have a form to collect all the details about the injury and to kind of vet people for getting grants, and nobody can really use the form. So we're trying to figure out, like, how do we get all these people together to build this project using all of the latest stuff. So we're trying to use serverless, we're trying to push accessibility. And so I'm learning a lot about that. But also just like, how do you manage an open source project with people all over the place? So that there's definitely a learning curve to that. But we want to support people as they get into open source and support people to learn new things so that they can slap a GraphQL API on their resume to get a better job.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that approach. One, I really like the idea of like the extreme sports thing, people might be like, oh, well, you know, like people are out there doing extreme sports, but these are folks that like, they don't have a lot of money and they're out there trying to do a thing. And when they get hurt and like they can get severely hurt and then, you know, they don't have a support network. So that actually just sounds like a great, great project to work on.
Absolutely. High Fives is really cool. And I think people in that industry are constantly, they have to do something bigger. They have to do a bigger trick each and every time. And then once they get injured, there's not a lot of support for them. So that's really scary. And anything we can do to help people out, the better. And it's not just for people who make their living doing that. It's for people who are skiers or snowboarders or mountain bikers who just get into a bad situation. So,
yeah, it's like even, you know, you break two ribs and like, it's amazing how long that'll, I mean, you know, that's non-trivial. And then like, there's nothing you can really do. And you just kind of just suffer and miss work and all the medical bills pile up.
Yeah, totally.
I also really like, and I've been hearing it a lot lately, and it just seems like it's getting a lot more focused. The focus on accessibility in terms of building websites has really been getting a lot of airtime lately. And I'm so stoked on that and think it's like a great career path, like to like niche down on accessibility is probably a good idea for a lot more people. And then just what it means in terms of building web pages, because I didn't hear a lot about that until recently, it feels like.
Yeah, me too. I think it's something that has been of interest to me for a long time. And it's something that is such an important thing. But until I really saw like High Fives athletes trying to click through this form, that really personalizes it for me. And it makes me want to learn more about how I can make these experiences better for people. One of the cool opportunities that we've been able to have and will continue to have is that our focus group for that site is injured athletes. So they tell us that they can't use the form, and then we see them not be able to. And they give us great ideas of how to be better at our jobs. And it's like one-on-one feedback that is so valuable.
I mean, like being, you know, like fully able is something a lot of us probably take for granted. So seeing somebody that's like actually like physically not able to use your web form has to be startling.
Yeah, it's very startling. And people will tell you exactly exactly how bad it is for them. And that's just the best feedback that you can get. And it helps you. I'm sure that will help me throughout the rest of my career, just thinking about that first.
Yeah, and especially, you know, like seeing it and getting that depth. That's awesome. That sounds like a great project and a great way. I think also like another, you know, thing to think about, like when people are learning, like projects like that are such an awesome way to, one, have a fulfilling thing that you're doing and helping others, but also, like you mentioned, like you can build your resume and work in open source and learn a lot of skills in a way that, you know, like is approachable and useful in like a professional capacity down the road as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And not to be too much of a salesman, but you can contribute to the projects doing anything. So documentation, mm-hmm. We've had project managers help out, and it's been exciting to see people make their first Git commit at the hackathon and stuff. So all sorts of different people are coming together to build something cool, which is awesome.
I built my career writing documentation for open source. Like that's how I like initially like broke into like web development in general, was writing documentation on open source projects. So I can't discount that approach enough. Like people need to do it, right? Like if you can write, if you can correct typos, if you can, you know, add images or update things to be more current, that stuff is all a great way to get started too, I think.
Totally. I posted something on Twitter about a friend of mine who was looking to get into contributing documentation, and the internet exploded with people asking for help. So there are tons of projects for getting involved in any capacity. So that was pretty cool.
I get confused with the low level code often on these open source projects. So documentation is often the level that I feel like I can contribute the most and like traditionally.
Yeah.
Especially as I started out, but still, like, you know, there's limits to my programming capacity. And I think, you know, there's something for everybody, and like, you know, kind of takes a village to build an open source project. So if you're thinking about it, there's opportunity out there. Yeah. So what do you have going on? You have your Moon Highway. So you do training, you have your books. Where can folks find out more about what Eve has going on professionally?
Yeah. You can follow me on Twitter at Eve Porcello, and our company Moon Highway does corporate training for JavaScript, Node, React, and GraphQL. And then we also have a new thing, GraphQL Workshop, which is a 2-day workshop that teaches basically everything you need to know to get started with GraphQL with Apollo Server and Apollo Client in React. And so we are kind of on a constant road trip doing those classes in various places around the country. So you can check that out too.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Eve.
Yeah, thank you.